Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. Morning. Good morning. It is Saturday. It is the 25th of March. March is almost over. And let me tell you something. You have to take full advantage of days like this because Rodney Smith is actually up and on time. You know, I only had to threaten him yesterday like seven times, but he made it. And whenever you do that, you have to be pumped up and be ready. Today is a different day for the show. Rodney and I were talking last night, and I said to him, I said, yo, you know, often we do this thing, and we honor other people. We talk about other people. We highlight their accomplishments. We highlight the work that they're doing in these streets. And we talk about what we do hit or miss every now and again. We could talk about politics ad nauseum. We could continue to talk about the war in Ukraine. It's important. We can continue talking about the escalation in Syria right now, that's important. We can continue to talk about Trump. That's important. Why don't we take a minute to talk about us? You know, we're out here doing a lot of great things, and those things are not to be taken for granted. It's highlighted to me and for me as I'm in Oklahoma for the past week, and I had dinner at my sister's house Thursday night. Shout out to my sister, her husband, my nieces, my nephew, thank you all for having me over to the crib. It was lovely getting with you all, seeing you. You know, yes, it is far, few, and in between, but y'all live in Oklahoma. It ain't like a brother just in the neck of the woods all the dang on time. So, you know, whenever I am, I definitely stop in to see them. My brother-in-law, my sister is a photographer. That's what she does, right? Graphic artist, all this. My brother-in-law is actually a painter, a sculptor. He does all that jazz, right? When I tell you, this cat did a piece that slapped me about seven times just from the initial view of it. It moved me in so many ways. It almost had me in tears, for real. And this is the first thing you see when you walk in the house. And it wasn't in that spot the last time I was here. So it really took me when I saw it this time. I was like, whoa, hold on, man. Where did this come from? And he and I are having some conversations about that because he needs to do something with that. And I'm very serious about that. He needs to do something with that. That he drew it for my sister. Well, he painted it. I'm sorry. He didn't draw it. He painted it for my sister, but I was like, yo, you need to do something with that one. I don't care if you paint it again or if you make it into a print where you just draw it, but we got to do something with that because it is extremely powerful. And no, I didn't take pictures because that's not what it's about. It wasn't the time for that. Once the time comes, then I already told him, I was like, I'm going to put you on blast. Like, you're going to be all over social media with this. Like, once you're done and we figure out what you want, how you want to do it, I'm definitely going to put you out there so you can get your money. Cause that thing is absolutely incredible. But I'm in conversation with them about their transition from Texas to Oklahoma. And one of the things that my sister kept saying was how difficult it was for her to find a good group of black people to network with. And I'm thinking to myself, the thought of doing something like the gathering that Rodney's doing out in Vegas has always been on my mind and on my heart, but I've never really had the time to do so. So I'm thinking maybe during the day is not feasible for me. Maybe I need to do something the afternoon, maybe early evening, something to that effect. So I'm looking right now in all earnest to find a partner. And, you know, Rashi called me out, so you know where I'm at now, in Charlotte to do something with, right? I haven't found the right partner yet. First off, I've not found a lot of good food in Charlotte, and we got to have good food. And secondly, I was blown away by some of the prices. I was sharing with Rodney just last night. I went to lunch, brunch, whatever the hell you want to call it, last week, Sunday, and I wanted chicken and waffles. So I got chicken and waffles. I got a waffle. I had five party wing pieces and a bottle of lemonade, and that was almost $30. Lee don't pay $30 for breakfast. I just don't see it. It doesn't make sense. It hurts my soul when I'm paying that kind of money for breakfast. It's breakfast, people. Breakfast, it should not be that damn expensive. Brunch, different story. Brunch is a mixture between breakfast and lunch. It's usually unlimited. I can get as much as I want. Get it. Got it. Don't have any problems shelling out those clams a little bit more. But breakfast, almost $30 for one person for five party wing pieces, a waffle, and a bottle of lemonade? Is it just me, or is that a problem? Rashi, would you pay that kind of money for that?
Well, there was a time when chicken wings were fairly expensive, but there is no excuse for paying more than a dollar for a waffle. Like, literally, the ingredients for $2 max if it's an artisan waffle with whole grain and wheat berries. What you're paying for, had you looked down at itemized, is possibly for the price of an egg. That can go all the way up to $3 an egg, depending on where you are in the country. And maybe the fact that it was a chain, like a mom-and-pop chain, where they were making their name for it, you know, Buck's Chicken and Waffles or the Johnson. So what you pay for, he said, I don't care. And then the service, right, the service of them bringing you chicken and waffles, I'm assuming it didn't just pop out of a machine,
right,
on you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
No, it is indicative of what's happening in this country. You are not going to spend less than $25 per. If you get something other than a sandwich, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you get three items, you're not going to spend less than $25. Like, even at a McDonald's meal is 15, you know. A McDonald's meal is 15. So you're talking about that extra, you know, and it literally comes out the machine. So the food we eat, we're gonna have to put it on a higher priority than what it is. Like, for some reason, we don't want to pay as much. We'll pay for some shit we get out of a machine and be satisfied, but we won't pay the comparable price from a human being, you know, for more items, more service, more. And I'm a believer in paying, like, for food. I buy thrift store clothes. You understand? I only walked a mile in other men's shoes. I've rarely walked a mile in my own damn shoes. So believe in paying for, like, getting people. When people have to touch me, I pay for people to. And I know that sounds horrible, but, like, if you got to do my nails, I'm gonna go in and pay because that I'm forcing you to touch me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you have to do my hair, if you have to perform any minor kind of tattooing or medical procedures, I'm going to go in and pay because I'm forcing you to put your physical hands on me. And that should have to come with pay now. People shouldn't be expected to just touch you. It's a lot of weird stuff out there that I'm going to pay for, but I will not be buying no. Essentially, with those five chicken wings, the chicken wings was $15, okay?
No, so no, what you bought didn't hear was, me. Rush, you didn't hear me. I didn't get chicken wings. I got party wing pieces.
The wingette?
Pieces, yes.
Oh.
Five wingettes. Not five
okay,
wings.
Yeah, that's, okay, say five wingettes, that's $7. Here in Kansas
no,
City.
No, five wingettes is not
$7. In Kansas City, five wingettes is $7. Pieces,
oh, Lord,
the little
Lord.
Pieces of a wing, those are $1. Those are no less than $1, $1.50 each here in Kansas City. If you get you some little wingettes, you're going you finna. If you buy you a let me tell you, I just bought an 8 bone-in chicken wing with a full fry and a large drink for $13.99.
Okay.
So me and you essentially had close to the same meal.
No, because you still say dang near $20 less than what I paid. So no, we did, because you had 8 pieces of chicken. I had 5 pieces of chicken. And you said fries, right? I had
a waffle
and a
drink,
potato potato. Potato. No. So, no, we didn't, that's bullcrap. Rodney, is it like that out in Vegas, bro? I mean, you know, you dropping 30 beans on a waffle, some daggone wingette pieces, and a bottle of lemonade? That's how we roll it in the streets?
Nah, bro. Nope.
I
will say this, though. If you go to one of the more high-end restaurants,
okay,
celebrity chefs, et cetera, you might pay $30, $40 for a burger, just to give you an idea. So in that regard,
right.
Yes,
with that.
You're talking about going to your regular greasy spoon? No. Not happening. As a matter of fact.
And to me, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't pay it because if I know that it costs that much, I wouldn't go. Now, you probably didn't know, but I just wouldn't go because I'm thinking, is there anything different about this wingette than over there at Wild Wings that I actually like in the hood?
Yeah.
And
say that.
More
say
than
that.
Likely, the answer is going to be no. So I'll just go to Wild Wings, support my brother and his business, and enjoy some wings and keep my change.
Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, y'all, I promise you, when my man finished ringing things up, I was like, yo, what you mean? You know, I'm like, so in my head, I'm like, okay, well, I'm getting wings, right? So I'm like, okay, to Rashi's point, chicken is expensive. If it's wing, whole wings, I'm with that. I understand. You know what I'm saying? Cool. You know, I'm getting four or five of those. Yeah, you're going to pay a little bit for that, right? So four or five of those, I'm thinking, let's say four. I'm thinking $2 a piece minimum, maybe $2.50. So I'm like, okay, that's about 10 bucks. Let's say the waffle was about another 10 bucks. You know what I'm saying? Because it was not a regular waffle, mind you. I'm sorry. It was the sweet potato waffle. So I'm like, whatever, dog. You know what I'm saying? You're honest.
Yes, now you're giving details. I'm telling you that when you start getting people, and who's going to feel these prices, Lee? When they go up and down on milk, when they go up and down on eggs, when they go up and down on meat, who feel it is the person who's made it their bread and butter to provide those services. And now we want him to, the menu, once he go to a certain price for the price of the item, we waiting on them to refluctuate their menu price back up and down based on whether the eggs was high and the meat was low, or the cheese was high and the eggs was low.
Well,
and we want them to attenuate it.
Marcy, that's not going to happen. So the prices is never going down. Let's be clear. If that price ever goes up, it ain't never coming down. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I've never been to a restaurant, a carry out, a bodega, in which they mark the prices up at one point, and then a year, two, three, four, five later, it doesn't matter, month, whatever, the prices go down. Never seen that. I've never seen that. If I'm wrong, somebody hit the number one on their phone and tell me that they have seen such, because I ain't never seen it. I have a limited view. Yes, I do. So I could very well be wrong, and that's okay. Somebody chime in and let me know if I'm wrong. But I don't think so. Boy, they lighten up. I think I'm right. I've never seen that happen. So that's out the door and out the window. What I'm trying to get to specifically is I don't mind supporting you. I don't mind supporting your business, but you're not going to break me in order for you to live. Because I didn't tell you to move into a community that you had to set your prices so high that you potentially price out your customer base. I didn't tell you to do that. Tell you to put in a water feature because you think it's cute, but that water bill is sky daggone high. So, again, you have to adjust your food prices in order to cover your water expense because you wanted something that you thought was cute. Dog, that's on you. I didn't tell you to hire a DJ because you wanted to provide an experience other than the deliciousness and the right price of your food. So you use that as a hook to get people in the door. Dog, that's your fault. I didn't tell you to do that. So you're setting your prices this high because you have to pay for all that overhead. Dog, that's not my problem. Eating should be an experience, yes. But the experience should be the food. The food and the cleanliness of the facility. That should be the experience. I'm sorry. The food, the cleanliness of the facility, and the service. That should be the experience. Those should be the things that keep you coming back. Great food, extreme cleanliness, superb service. Does anybody disagree with that? Okay. I take your silence as a no. Because, I mean, think about it. Places that you tend to go to time and again are the places that provide those three things. when you walk in, if you are a regular, they know what you want, service. When you walk in, be you a regular or not, it's clean, cleanliness. When you sit down and your food is served to you, hot, in a timely manner, and as you ordered it, meaning you don't have to send it back and forth 3-4 times because they freaking up in the kitchen, and you bite into whatever it is you order, the roti, oxtail, chicken and dumpling, for Rodney, the banana pudding, I'm sorry, the bread pudding, a steak, a vegan meal, whatever it is that you're biting into. And those flavors burst in your mouth and take you back to wherever, to your uncle's house, your grandfather's house, granny house, auntie's house, the backyard barbecue, whatever. Those flavors take you back to that moment in time, and you make that connection, you're going to come back time and time again. Yes, ma'am.
I have a restaurant I frequent, and they have a variation of those things you mentioned, but mostly they are black-owned. When you ask for a single, they pour accidentally a double. And when you ask for a double, you just get the bottle. And the last couple of times I went, I was able to see my hostess get in a fight, a kitchen fire. You know, just it's not for what you think. It's the one to make sure my daughter turned over at least one time in the black community. I try to do that because it's hard to do in Kansas City. You have to drive. You have to intentionally stay on the east side of the city so you can spend your dollar black.
Mm-hmm.
And then mostly, I like that I'll accidentally have to tell, you know, hey, you, it's not. I want to say something like PJ Moore. It's not the Savoy. It's not fake. It's where real people work. And you might get somebody say, "Girl, what you say?" And everybody look.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might. It's not scripted. It's not where people have to go back behind a wall to be human at the restaurant. So, I have had to send my food back a couple times, and I probably have to do it again as they, you know, hire new chefs and do, you know, new shit as a budding restaurant that it is. But I'm pretty committed to, you know, once a paycheck going into that restaurant and spending at least $50, because without doing so, I can't guarantee that I'll be able to go into that restaurant every 2 weeks and spend like $50.
There you go. So Rodney, you know, I want to build where Rashi just started to, you know, that commitment to recycling the dollar. Now, I know that for the longest, the Gathering had housing at the Westside Bistro. And as of late, you've moved it to your new home. Rodney, how's that been? What is the new home? How's that going?
So we moved it to the Westside Oasis, or WSO, formerly Historic Seven Seas. And it's actually right across the street. It's on the west side of the street from the Westside Bistro. And we've been at the bistro since it started, since the Gathering started, which was shortly after the bistro opened. And one of the reasons why, well, the main reason why we went there was because it was a sit-down location, basically right in the community, right down the street from sort of our cultural center, which is the West Las Vegas Library and Art Center complex. And at the time, it had been put in place supposedly to ensure that there would be job training for those jobs at the casinos downtown. And it was to give black people, you know, kind of a leg up and opportunity. And this came about right after the Rodney King riots. Very few people went there. So the students, which at the time were mostly people who looked like us, didn't get the chance to practice and have any real world experience in their restaurant, the Westside Bistro, which is part of the Culinary Training Academy. And so Sam said, "Hey, They put something there for our people to get training, and they're not getting real-world training, so they won't be prepared for the real-world job. So we need to go there and support them. So, Rodney, I need you to meet me there every Friday, and we're going to have lunch. And at least we will be there to give them some real-world training and give them real-world feedback on their service. That is actually how it started at the B-Show. And then as time passed and TC's Rib Crib opened, Sharon came in after the, you know, the big hurricanes in Louisiana and Mississippi. Then we started doing, when the bistro would be closed, we would go to TC's Rib Crib and to support black business on months with five Fridays on that fifth Friday. We would also go to TC's Rib Crib. Well, as much as I enjoyed the bistro and as well as they treated us there, it wasn't a black-owned business. We were supporting black people by providing that real-world training for the students. And usually the food was pretty good, especially towards the end of the class. But something always gnawed at me, and that was that we were spending a lot of money. Well, I considered it a lot of money. Usually the meal was less than $10. So it wasn't really that much money at a pop. But I've been going there for 15 years. So Matt just multiplied 15 years times $10. And the meal is $10.
That's a lot.
So that's just one person. Yeah. That's me. That's what I've spent mm-hmm. there in that time. And I used to wonder, man, if that was in a black business, you know, and, you know, we normally average about 10 people at the gathering. You know, sometimes it could be 15. Sometimes it could be 35. Sometimes it could be 3 or 4. But, you know, that was still money. And I thought that that was money that wasn't going into a black business. So actually, Terry and Hero, the Westside Oasis, asked me to come in a couple of times. And I was like, you know, I thought about it, but, you know, I said, well, our home is at the Westside Bistro. And then finally, when an opportunity came, when the bistro came, its menu, its pricing, as well as its seating requirement, it sort of pushed us out, and we needed a new home, and there were very few places that would accommodate a sit-down meal at the lunch hour. And that's when I was talking to Terry and Hero at WSO, and they're like, well, we will start serving lunch on Fridays. So if you come, I said, well, when? And I said, because we're going to start, I'm looking for something this coming Friday. And he said, we will start serving lunch this coming Friday. And sure enough, that Friday, we had, I think, about 17 people, I think it was, somewhere mm-hmm. between 17 and 20 people. We had they did something beyond my expectations. They set aside a room separate from the bar and normal dining facility. They put mm-hmm. the white tablecloths on. They got the white napkins out. And
why they had the white napkin and the white tablecloth?
Because we could see that they were clean. And I appreciate that. And I also go look in the bathrooms before I eat in a restaurant. You were talking about cleanliness before.
Say that again.
I walk into the restaurant. I look and see what that looks like. But then I typically make a beeline to the bathroom, because if the bathroom is clean, that tells me the kitchen probably isn't clean, or at least the people cooking in the kitchen aren't clean, and I need to roll out. And the bathrooms were straight, and they always have been from the first time I went there. It smells good in the bathroom, brother. They have a mirror. You can look at yourself. There's no spots all over the faucet. The garbage can isn't overrunning. There's tissue to dry your hands in the bathroom. Don't have to go in the stall to pull off the toilet paper. You know, those are important to me. And they welcomed us in. They even came and started listening to the gathering. And that was something that I missed from the staff at the bistro, because in the early years, the students and sometimes the staff would hear us talking. And even at TC's Rib Crib, sometimes Sharon would hear the conversation and she would join in. Well, now we're getting that that family aspect of it back at the West Side. Oasis and Terry and Hero have made us feel nothing but welcomed, comfortable, and they're even willing to, when we get too many people, to have the long table where the folks on one end are not able to hear the folks on the other end. They're willing to rearrange the tables for us so that we can see each other and we can have a better conversation and dining experience. So all of that to answer your question, Lee, and say thus far it has been a blessing to be at the Westside Oasis, a.k.a. WSO, formerly the Historic Seven Seas.
You're not off the hook yet because you shared something that bleeds into where I was going. You said you haven't gotten the feedback that you've been looking for over the years where folks in other cities have picked up the idea of the gathering and rolled with it. I think maybe, Rodney, that they're so stuck in emulating or duplicating exactly what you're doing that they're not looking outside the box, and they fail to realize that there are two parts of the gathering. There's the gathering on Fridays, and then there's the gathering after dark, which sparked the idea for me that, okay, well, maybe I can't do it during the week on Friday because, you know, I got a job. But maybe I can do it one afternoon or one evening during the weekend where we can get folks together to unwind and to still connect. Because what I'm finding in Charlotte is it's a very transient place. There's people moving in all the daggone time. And, you know, they are in search of other people that look like them so that they can, as Rashi says, so we tying this all together, they can patronize their businesses. You know what I'm saying? I've been looking high and low, low and high for somebody to do my feet. Again, going to what Rashi says, you know. And I found somebody. Now, I got to play with their schedule to see what works for me, but I finally found somebody, black-owned business, that will do a pedicure for me. But I have stopped so many people and asked them, yo, where can I get my feet? Oh, I don't know. I used to go to this one girl, but you live here and you have no idea. You've gotten stuck on the fact that there was one person that you knew that provided you a service. They no longer provide you a service, and you're okay with that. You just let that go. So, yeah, bro, I can't do that. And that's why I'm looking for somebody to partner with so I can duplicate what you're doing in Vegas. It won't ever be the same, but I hope that it is a welcoming committee to the city, and it will take off and grow. You know what I'm saying? Because that, I think, will be my introduction to the other things I want to do, the Black Wall Street things I want to do, the presentations I want to start doing. Because, again, there's a lot of black-owned businesses in Charlotte. And I want to start getting that thing, but I go back to where I started. I haven't found a partner yet that serves good food and has good prices. Because what I don't want to do is be that dude that brings people to a spot where they don't feel like they're getting respected due to horrible service, or respected because it's a shakedown because the prices are so daggone high and the quality of food doesn't match those prices. Go ahead, get in.
Well, Lee, so we do have, and we have had the gathering after dark because the gathering has been from 11 till 1 or 11 till 2 or 12 till 2. So it's designed to, so people at lunchtime can get a break away from the J-O-B, roll over, commune with their own, break some bread, get refreshed to go back and, you know, meet the man, right? So that's actually what it was designed for. But because, you know, and first of all, let me tell you, I don't think that there's too many places in this country more transient than Las Vegas. I mean, it's so transient here, they have to buy school books twice a year. So it's very few places more transient than us. But at the same token,
right,
it is key to find a location that you're comfortable in with all of the things that you mentioned. And
mm-hmm.
that's why it truly is a blessing for us to be at the WSO, because it gives us the time that we need. Because my sister over there at Grits Cafe, Trina Giles, our history maker, first black female firefighter, she has Grits Cafe. I love the food there. I love Trina. I love her story. But the problem is we stay there 2 hours. Now, people come and go, but still we occupy that space for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a lot of us at one time, you know, not all the time, but sometimes. And so we would detract from her business, or, you know, she might kindly ask if we could, you know, move out so other people could dine in. So it wouldn't be conducive for us or her for us to do our gathering there. So finding that right spot with all those ingredients is important. Now, I still
mm-hmm.
go to Grits to eat, and I recommend it to yeah. other people. But for the gathering, unfortunately, because she was one of Sam's, you know, direct descendants, so to speak. But unfortunately, I could not support her business with the gathering. But
mm-hmm.
we did start the gathering after dark so that people who couldn't make it during the day, for whatever reason, could still attend, because people would call me up or they would message me and say, hey, Rodney, I want to attend, but I'm not able to break away from the J-O-B during the day. Can
right.
you do something at night? So once a month, we did the gathering after dark so that those people who couldn't make it during the day could roll. And then starting next month, we're going to do a monthly gathering at someone's house. And Raymond Lambert
okay.
has volunteered his house. And that's going to be on a Sunday, I believe it's a Sunday afternoon. And that will start
okay.
next month. And it's going to be a little different, because we're going to delve into topics a little more. It's going to be a little more academic. We're actually going to have people who will come in to speak or present. We got some university professors out at UNLV that Raymond knows that wants to be a part of it. They want to present some things. I think they're black history professors, but I'm not sure about that. And, you know, we're going to, from the gathering, we had the reading club. And so he's going to reestablish the reading club, but it's going to have his flavor on it. We are going to do the gathering after dark next Sunday. We're going to start the gathering after dark at a different location. And you're going to have to message me to find out where that location is. But so it is growing here in Las Vegas sort of organically, which is what I was hoping that it would do when people came in and moved to different locations that's attended, that maybe they would do something there. The gathering is also, I call it, it's our cultural welcome center for black people and others to
mm-hmm.
the Las Vegas, but with an emphasis on black people, because when Vegas is a very difficult place to establish yourself if you don't know anyone. And so you can come to the gathering and you can establish your family or your tribe, depending on how you think of yourself and that type of cultural phenomena. And you can meet people, and we can, because you come to the gathering and whatever it is that you do, you want to do, we probably have a connection for it. So that's the
right.
other aspect of the gathering. And people who have a business, it's not a business networking thing, but there's definitely opportunities for businesses to be exposed. And Lee, I got to say this, because I'm an inviter. Leslie Turner, she did a poem at the 1865 No Racism Banquet. And she said, while she was sitting down waiting for dinner, she scribbled it on a napkin. Now, this sister's in charge of the Mass Liberation Project. It's 5 years strong. It's
mm-hmm.
gotten mothers, black mothers out of jail on Mother's Day. It's expanded that program. And Lee, when I tell you that this, you say blew my socks off, blew my wig off, she did all of that with her poem. And it actually has a lot to do, I think, with our show today, because it talks about where black people have been. And so when black people, if you come to Vegas, more than likely at some point you've been to the gathering, you've heard about the gathering. Brothers and sisters come from out of state and they get off the plane. We have politicians, presidential candidates, vice presidents come to the gathering. And I want to, I'm giving an invite right here on public. Leslie Ann Turner, if you're out there listening, call into the show. It's a short poem. Call into the show. Lee dabbles in that arena. Call into the show and share your poem, because if I have to read it, it won't be the same as you, but I do want to read her poem in the show today.
Maybe we can get her on.
It's right like
maybe
the
we
show.
Get her on next month. This April is for us is, you know, poetry month. And so perhaps we can get her on to scribble some more for us while she's on with us in the month of April. And if you just give me any information, I'll be that dog on her heels to butter her roll up and get her on here proper. Because the poetry is one thing, but her where she has chosen to put her fist in the struggle is also another. You know, what part of the struggle we decide we're going to hammer against, or as a Jamaican say, what part of the beast we gonna bang on? You know what I'm saying? So, let's see about getting her in for April, and giving her the floor she deserves, Brother Rodney.
And Sister Rashi, what you said right there is, so the arts and the gathering supports the arts. The arts was such an integral part of the movement and a powerful part of the movement. And that's something that I said, that our movement today won't move as far and as well without the arts. And we have to bring the arts back. And that's why usually at the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Candlelight Vigil, we would have poetry, because it's that spoken word.
I know
that you have to have words, or what, you know, for those religious folks, they say, well, words can kill you, but it can also speak life into you. And with our movement, we have to speak life into that movement. We have to speak life into those organizations. When you come to the gathering, we share our story, which is our life. And then that allows other people to open up and share their story, their life. So we're speaking life into people. We like to think that we're speaking life into our community. And I think that every place, because in the old days, where there was a little hole in the wall, you know, someplace, there was always somewhere in our communities. It used to be the churches, and the churches have kind of fallen off, to be blunt about it. So we have to have a meeting spot. And so that's what we're trying to do with the gathering. I say we've been going at it for 15 years, and we're still there. Now, I don't know what tomorrow may bring, but I can tell you for 15 years, we've brought a whole lot of people into the family at the gathering.
You know, I like it because it's an information, gathering. Like, what are you gathering? You're gathering, like you said, the networking skills, but y'all not just sitting there introducing yourselves to each other. There's vital information being shared, like where you can tell your people to get food. I'm pretty sure at some point you say, we'll be at blah, blah, blah in the corner of such and such if you know somebody who needs food. And then someone else is sharing, daycare, this or that. The information that's being brought is almost as important as the nourishment that's being shared and the networking that's being knitted. If you don't bring information, actionable information for people, eventually they'll just stop coming. So what it means is at these gatherings, there's information that real time, not just historical or what might happen if we plan a certain way in the future. Real-time information about actionable behavior, actionable events, things actually go to and benefit from or join and eventually see the dividends of those programs in their life. That's what we need to have. It's not just to show up and eat. I mean, it is just to show up and eat. Yes, because that's a part of it. We want our community nourished. But show up with something that you can share that you know, if it ain't nothing else, but which wash house has, you know, free dryers on which day. Be able to share
Did
something
you say wash house?
That a community could wash out. You don't know what the wash house is?
Okay, I know now.
You don't know what the wash house is? The laundromat. The laundromat.
I got you. Never heard that, but I got you.
Yeah, you got to know who's got the free dryers, right? You got to know who is, for one, when is the tax off for the kids? Stuff like that. All that information compiles to a relief, I call it. It's relief for the community. One person knows this part, but between the sharing, it can get done. Because for some reason, community relief is not something they blast on the news. They don't say, Tyrone killed Tyrone, and here's where you can get you some free cheese and butter. They just tell you about Tyrone killing Tyrone, and then they move on. So the community efforts, the community services, the things that they have are not blasted so that the whole community can take advantage of it. Well, where do you find out? You find out at meetings like The Gathering. You find out at consortiums, think tank consortiums, where you can say, listen, I don't know if y'all know this, but over here there's this. And from there, you know, the rest of the whole community can take advantage. And if you realize that they're getting something on the east side that you don't get advantage to on the west side, those are the kind of concerns you could take to a politician and say, can you explain to me the non-equal distribution of the resources for the blah, blah, blah from the west side to the east side? And then those are concerns that they have to act against, unequal distribution of resource. But if you don't know the resource exists, you don't know if it's being unequally distributed. So thank you, Mr. Rodney, for that, because they don't just show up. I don't want you to – people ain't just showing up, eating a plate of neck bones and leaving. They show up and they share vital information about what's happening in Las Vegas proper and possibly, you know, nationally, that people can take advantage of and steer clear of for future, you know, for future reference. So, all right, Mr. Rodney, go ahead on and do that, because that's what it's going to have to be. That's the old ways before the internet. You know what I'm saying?
Well, The Gathering is something that I went to so I could hear Sam, an elder man, a wiser man, who enlightened me and helped me come into my blackness. It wasn't that I was not aware of myself before Sam, but with the knowledge that he shared with us, whether it was about the black community in Vegas, the black community wherever, Sam would find out what your last name was. He would ask you where you're from, and then Sam might start to tell you about your people and things that you didn't even know about your people, because he was just so well-read, and he had traveled, and he understood people. To a certain extent, Lee embodied some of that with all of his travels and the connections that he has made. And I remember listening to the brother George Frazier. I think he came to Vegas for something, and we were talking, and he said that we have to be like spiders creating a web that extends outwards, that is a web of our connections for our people. And that's what The Gathering is. It has come into being. It is a network of people who come together to break bread and to share one another. And then in sharing one another, we always try to give some black history in that sharing. Mm-hmm. Because if you have a group of black people together and you're not talking about us, you're not sharing who we are, that's a missed opportunity. If black people are together and they're not sharing who they are, they're not meeting another black person, that might have been the person that you needed to do whatever, or maybe that was the person that needed you to do whatever. I shared with them why you should know who the person is. Lee was talking about food earlier. I said, know who the person is that's serving you your food. I said, look into their eyes and ask them, what is their name? And I says, you may catch them by surprise, and you have to ask it a second time. But I said, keep looking into their eyes and sincerely ask them, what is their name? Because you may be the first person that entire day that recognized their humanity. I said, even in their name, well, it's my waitress, it's my server, my servant, my serf from serfdom, right, my slave. I said, look that person in the eye and ask them genuinely, what is their name? And I said, when you look them in their eye, and if this is something that you're not used to doing, it's going to sure to open yourself up to opening yourself to, and then helping them open up to you. But look into their eyes and don't leave that restaurant without knowing the name of your server. That simple act literally changed my life, Lee. It changed my relationship with people. I got that from Sam. He says, if you go to a stadium and you leave that stadium of thousands of people, and you don't know one more person when you leave and when you enter, that was another missed opportunity. So I'm sharing that with you all because Sam shared it with me, and I can tell you that it's got me to meet people that I otherwise wouldn't have met. It's gotten me service that I otherwise wouldn't have gotten. But the best part was going back to George Frazier and that web of connection, is that it connected me to another human, and it sometimes help that other human steal their humanness from me. And I thought that was a powerful thing.
We're so far from that, Brother Rodney. Like, we got whole valleys, no new friends, no randos. Like, our attitude, the resting current attitude amongst young people about others, they're not somebody we're creating opportunities to get to know. They're people we're creating opportunities to shut out of our life. You know, there's a fear of other. There's I don't think they're scared of other. They're like, gone with the, they call, if you don't have a connection, and I asked my children about this, because they like, no, they the ops. I said, what's the ops? And they the opposite, the opposition. They looked at me like, don't act brand new. They the ops. And I'm like, well, okay, what happened? How did they become the ops? And it was like everybody start out the ops until you can form a bond that a resting real bond that they can pull on, a string of connection. Then you the ops. And I'm like, well, okay, well, if that party never exists that they attend together, or a class that they attend together, I'm 50, so I don't get it 100%. Like I said, I was questioning this idea, but that idea of somebody new, these are opportunities where I'm going to find a new friend. Like, I don't think nothing builds anxiety in our young people like a new friend. Who am I have to be? Do I be my authentic self with that person? Do I get to? So the other, those situations are actually moments of anxiety for I'm going to say at least 25 and under. Okay. And so now, because I'm 50, I'm at the tail end of where you at, Brother Rodney. Let's go and see who's out there. How would I ever know about? Well, why wouldn't I? How much could it hurt to know these people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, young people feel like that connectedness of other people knowing about you is a negative thing. They don't. It's not how many people can I get to know. It's if I get to know those people and those people know those people and those people might know me, right? And the connectedness of knowing about me from others, it's a source of anxiety for young people and probably for others who have created these fake-ass realities for themselves all the way around the world. But But you say, like, yeah, let's get together and get to know each other and find a new friend. But that is not the resting behavior right now. It's people from the ops need to be vetted, probably double vetted, before they could even get a get opportunity to get to know even the fake ass you create, let alone your authentic self. So there's a lot of work to be done, fellas, because young people are not, they can go to 10 games and only speak and get to know whoever they came to the game with. And they don't feel they have lost anything in a concert where they don't meet a friend, or a game they don't meet a friend, or any event, okay, where they don't meet a new friend. They don't, that doesn't bother them. In fact, they're glad that they avoided the ops.
Hmm. Well, I can't get with that. I'm sitting next to a young lady on the plane yesterday, and we had a full-fledged conversation. Come to find out, she's a small business owner. She's a mom of two. She has a meal planning business. She's a personal trainer. I'm like, okay. Like, and she was visiting a city for her very first time. That's why we were on the plane. That's where she was going while we were on the plane and stuff. Her boyfriend was, he was away for work, and he asked her to come out to visit him. So that's what's up, you know what I'm saying? So it's cool. We connected through social media yesterday, so hopefully I'll have her on the show soon, to be honest with you, because I would love to highlight her business and the things that she does. Beautiful young lady, too. Beautiful young lady. Inside and out. She was cooler than the fan, so that made it all the worthwhile. But she stole my seat, though. I had the window seat. She gave me the damn aisle. I'm like, yo, how you going? He was still my seat. That's my seat. But you know, it's all right. It's cool.
Hey, so, Lee, you know women will steal the food off your plate. So if they'll steal the food off your plate, you know they'll take your seat.
Rodney, I want to transition to the other place of what we were talking about yesterday, because we're going to we might end this a little early because there's something at the end of this I wanted to talk to you about. So very important to me. We were talking yesterday about vices. Rashi, I gave you a heads up on this. We were talking yesterday about vices. And it initially started because I was saying how the facility that I work at directly across the way is a marijuana processing facility. And I was saying to Rodney how Tulsa seems to have a dispensary and a church on every corner. And on some intersections, it was four churches. And other intersections, it was three churches and one dispensary. We got into the conversation about the necessity of the necessity of finding an escape, but the downfall of overindulgence. Rashi, just to bring you totally up to speed on this. So Rodney's position was he didn't feel that any illicit drug should be banned if alcohol is legal. Am I right, Rodney, so far?
That's correct.
Because there are more deaths that happen from alcohol usage than any other illicit drug. Then we got into the conversation of, well, what's too much? Is moderation even possible? Is it just illegal drugs that are vices? Or he hit home when he started talking about porn. I was like, you know, we ain't talking about that because, you know, that's my thing right there. We ain't talking about my vice. But we talked about sex in general. We talked about you know, food. So I really thought that you would love this conversation, Rashi. And I didn't want to go too deep into it with him absent of you because I felt that this was really your wheelhouse. So we'll rehash a bit of what we had going on last night. I feel I think that marijuana usage is not out of control. I think it's out of hand, and I'll explain the difference. I don't think it's out of control because relative, I think the same amount of people are still smoking weed, relatively. I think it's out of hand because we've transitioned to a society where people don't care. And much like other things, I don't want to constantly have to shield my children or my children's children, because I'm in that category now, my children having children, from life. And I'm tired of going places and having to be subjected to the very strong odor of marijuana constantly. And what I've noticed is that's normally, speaking of my travels, Rodney, in this country. Because when you go out of this country, it's nowhere nearly as bad. Nowhere nearly. You'll still get it from time to time, but it's nowhere near. It's not like everybody in the store or every fifth person in the store is smelling like marijuana like it is in this country. You go to certain stores, you know full and daggone well every other person or every fifth to seventh person that you're passing is going to smell like marijuana. And that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. That's what I mean by out of hand. I don't think it's out of control. I just think it's out of hand. Like, we have so gone past a social norm of having respect, not just for others, but also for ourselves. Everybody don't got to know what the hell you doing. They don't. And I am so far gone from understanding why folk now don't care about that. Go ahead.
I think they care. They care, brother. Hey, y'all remember Flocka? Okay, because there's been a lot of dope come through. Not the artist. There was a drug called Flocka.
Mr. Rodney,
are you
I
up on
that.
Your street? Not have you taken it. Are you familiar with the street drugs? No, because I don't take them. I just familiarize myself with the what it looked like and what the resulting behavior is. You understand? Have you ever heard of or are you familiar with the drug Flocka, Mr. Rodney?
The name sounds familiar, Sister Rashi, but I cannot say for sure that I've heard of Flocka.
Flocka is a methamphetamine derivative. Okay, it's a meth. It's not even good as meth, and I'm saying that in a chemical way, not in a psychosocial way. Okay, so Flocka is like the dirty residue at the bottom of a meth container. You understand? And they found a way to still get people to do this particular drug. Now, when you do the drug, it would make them one, almost like not care about being tased or shot. There's a whole series of videos on people who have gone completely, you know, high off Flocka, and they in the street, they on the edge of the building. You understand? They have parted completely with reality. And when you try to do all the techniques we know to get people back, which is we restrain them, we mace them. We billy club them in the head, and then we shoot them, right? I mean, this is how the state operates. This is not our design. This is how the state functions, okay? And so when the state would come in, and by the state I mean the police, and they would get and try to grab them, they would be almost like totally receded into their non-executive functioning brain. And like one lady, the cop who tried to restrain her, she started trying to take his pants off and grab his penis, okay?
Mm.
That might have been another issue, Sister Rashi, but go ahead.
So so the reason why I'm mentioning this particular drug is because the occurrence of insanity with it almost made it take itself off the market. Like, even the people who were smoking it was like, nah, I don't fuck with that shit. Just give me some meth, you know?
Mm.
What we will come to find if we release, like you say, Brother Rodney, release a drug to a population the way we did alcohol, the way we're trying to do marijuana. When we release it into a population, it's at least 10 years of just studying to see what had happened. We have to just sit back and look, because that's how you do drugs, and that's how we did the motherfucking COVID-19 vaccine. You release a molecule or a substance into the population, and then you have to see what had happened was after they do it. So we released alcohol, and we saw a whole bunch of little babies who could barely function. You could clearly see the fetal alcohol baby. There is a marked difference between a normal functioning fetus and a fetus that's already got an olive in his mouth, okay? You can see it. You can see a marked functioning, honey. You can see a difference between, and I go back to fetal development, because what do we get in the end? We get a whole bunch of non-functional adults who are still somewhat dependent on that chemical in order to function, because they molecules in their brain was formed under that chemical, okay? So then we saw the crack baby, right? And we still ain't, you know, figured out what we gonna do with all these damn crack babies. But you know a crack baby when you see them. They are hyperreactive. You can go ask a social worker. She know a damn crack baby when she see it. I tell you that. Because them babies, even if they have the physique of a normal baby, they cognitive speed and processing ain't right. And they behavior, the subsequent behavior that comes from crack babies is different. And they almost, and if we could do the study, and if the motherfucking lady would tell the truth when she go to the doctor and say she's smoking crack, we could mark the development of that baby. You know, if it survived, we could check that whole baby's lifespan, been around cocaine-based, been around long enough to get the numbers from a whole generation, because they was doing it in, you know what I'm saying, in the 50s, 60s. And so cocaine was not wrong then. It was the party drug of the disco era. So if we could track them babies, we could see that the crack cocaine baby has its own thought, reasoning, and, you know, autism and ADHD spectrum. That whole thing got blew up. So now we're saying we want to release the next drug. The next drug we want to release is weed. And what I say is, y'all late, because as long as it could just be popping up out the ground and we ain't waiting on people to bring it from Nicaragua and all that, weed is like in some of the national parks, they got gorilla growth. You know, it's everywhere. So now we get to see what's going to happen cognitively between the babies born with weed and the babies, you know, that ain't born with weed. And eventually we'll be able to turn and say to at least America, hopefully, somebody's going to take these studies on. Nobody's going to take them all on. That's too much data. But somebody's going to say, what's up with the drink, with the little drunk baby? What's up with the little crack baby? What's up with the little weed head baby? What's up with these little meth babies? And they're going to track the development of these babies, say, from birth to kindergarten, when they got to take their first cognitive exam to see can they remember their name. Can they put the square block in the square hole? That whole thing we give children before we track them for government institution, like you call it, Mr. Rodney, or school. If we can't track that and say, hey, turn, this is what's wrong, we ain't never going to get the regulation, get it back in hand, like you said, Lee. We have to have statistical data or something to show, like we got with cancer and cigarettes, or like we got with asbestos and mesothelioma. We got to have a direct, this is what happens when you do this type relationship to the drug. Treat it like it's, you know, the drugs we give at the hospital, tell them this is what some of the stuff you're going to get to see if you keep getting high with this baby. Everybody else who ain't pregnant, I for real don't care. I really only care for real about fetal development so that a person can have a choice whether or not they want to get high later on. But what we ain't being honest with ourselves about is that we have been playing with dope so long, secretly playing with dope in this country, that the baby don't get a choice of do I want to get high. It's how soon can I get high again since I've left my mother's womb. You know what I'm saying? So it'd be as soon as they can get a hold to daddy's beer on the edge of the coffee table. Okay? So we don't really understand what that is going to do. So, yes, release it all, Rodney, but release it all where we have to take blood. When you go to the doctor, they don't ask you, do you want me to screen you for dope? They immediately screen you for dope. Every time you go to any doctor, the first thing they do is screen you for dope and then cancer or whatever. But they make sure that they are tracking dope within the population so that we can get an idea of what's happening. Other than that, it's just scare tactics. It's Christian, Orthodox Christian scare tactics.
But I don't want to get too far away from where we were trying to go. So where we were trying to go was and is there a potential for a balance between your vices and living a quote-unquote normal life? You know, do you... Because anything in moderation, too much of anything is a bad thing, right? So is that the case really with everything? That is the question. And is that the case with everything? You know,
because they're going to say,
too much drinking water bad.
Is stressful, my life is so stressful, I got to escape with my vice, right?
Correct. It's too much
then
drinking water
point,
bad.
At some point, your life
exercise.
Ain't even that stressful. Yeah.
It's too much exercise bad. It's too much sex bad. It's too much going to the range and shooting off guns bad. It's too much work bad. Are we not strong enough to balance our vices with everyday life?
Because we could try, Lee. Like you could say, I'm getting 8 hours tonight. And you get into bed in time for 8 hours, but you actually get 6 hours of sleep. Like you in laying in the same place, and then you say, I'm going to work today from 9 to 5. And then you get there at 8:55, but you leave at 5:17. And so somewhere in there, you got an extra 30. They got the 30 minutes, some off. It's okay. Cool. And then you say you can say all these things, Lee, but I don't time thing. I think it's a perceived life worth. Like, what is this time worth? What am I doing this for? Like, why am I doing this? And when you get into a life where you can't say why you are doing something, as hard as my job is, I know why I teach. I know why I teach, because I personally am tired of dumbass people around me. Personally, I have seen a marked decrease in the amount of intelligent people all them people I'm supposed to network with, Mr. Rodney, and get all this information from. They don't have a lot of information nowadays, and they're proud of it, okay? So I'm a part of a mission to increase the knowledge and know-how of people. I don't want us to keep trending less knowledge. I want us to trend more knowledge. And so I push the idea of learning something, at least one something new, to all the people around me. All right, fine. So it's a stressful job. So what do I do to escape? I come home and I make sure I don't go to sleep. I pass out a little bit. I drink about at least 3/4 of a pint of rum. And I don't down it like a savage. I don't down it like a savage. I drink it with my, you understand?
You sip on it like a lady.
I sip on my cocktail. It's not a cocktail. I don't play with simple sugar. I drink my shots like a person who is trying to not go to sleep thinking about teenagers calling them a bitch and you can't punch them in their forehead, okay? So eventually I will not have the children that I have. I'll have a cooler bunch of children. Now, if I'm still drinking, because I'm telling myself I'm drinking that much because they done wore my ass out there, right? Now, if I have a whole different band of children and I'm going a whole new mission and I'm still drinking that much or more, then that's when if I can't turn to myself and say, self, and this is where most people fall apart at, literally, self, put that shit down. It ain't even real. You ain't that stressed. And you understand, you know what that tastes like. You know what it's going to do. Save some for tomorrow. Somebody going to piss you off tomorrow. You'll need a shot. And put it down, put it back, and maybe even forget about it the next day. Not even have a day, even with the stressors that trend you towards your vice. And then, now here's the hard part. It's not the response of something is wrong, I want to escape. It's I'm ready to have fun. And now I can't have fun without it. I can't be happier. Explain it better. Even if usually I'm using the vice to be normal from being unhappy, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm that regular happy and I want to kick it up a notch and I'm using that same, you know, drug, something's wrong. Something's wrong. To me, something's wrong. So I make sure that I don't be out here drinking because it's my birthday or drinking because, you know, that ain't how that works.
So last part, we were talking about sex. So what are your thoughts on the family that comes about from a guy whom has multiple, and I mean multiple, dozens of children, yet the young lady...
No, it ain't him.
Okay. Well, you already answered the question.
Because that ain't his womb. That ain't his womb.
Okay.
It's some crazy lady out here who can't wait to have his baby. She just can't wait. She already knows. She know about the others, at least half of the others. You never know. What I'm finding in my family is we don't really get to know all of a man's children till after he dead. And the 23 and me shit pop up. But
so right with that, you so right with that.
So what I've come to find is it's not him. I'm like, I'm done. I know. She's like, what? I'm done blaming men. There's some lady out there. She's so sad. She's so lonely. She's so scared that she's going to have to exist in a reality with no string to pull on with this man, no power to hold over him. And she know when she got pregnant. She know when she put that pill on. She knew when she was on. She knows. He didn't rape her. You understand? He didn't commit. The only way he could have raped her is if he told her, I got your back with this baby until this baby, whatever. Because she knew that wasn't going to work. But that's emotional, you know, financial rape. But physical, actual rape, no. Baby, you sat there, you were sitting there waiting. I'm telling you, as a woman who went and got the hotel room, okay, and sat in there and waited. There's a loneliness out there in these women, and there's a one-upman. It's some kind of Nick Cannon-esque. I know why they trying to bleed Nick Cannon dry, but I don't really understand how Rick Cannon can still do what Nick Cannon is doing. You understand? It's some Tyrone Cannon doing this, and I'm like, hey, man, y'all can keep doing this. Y'all can keep having these babies because honestly, we need more black babies. I don't even front. I don't shame black babies no more for coming into existence. They got to do it somehow. Black babies must come. And if we got to get it between Shireen and Pookie, if it's got to be, it's got to be. And if we got to, if it, you know, we just got to come and be ready for it, for this baby born under all this socioeconomic strain. But the baby got to come. We got to have him. We won't make it without that baby.
So, Sister Rashi, I was with you, and when you said the baby got to come part, I paused. And I paused not because I don't say something similar and believe something similar, because black people do need more babies, because that's our future, and that's our power. That's our power now, and that's our power tomorrow. But at the same token, as we say that, and going back to Lee talking about the brother with 34 kids, and you saying that you don't know how many children a person has, a man has, truly until he's passed, is it that we need more babies? Because that is a thing. Or is it that we need to take care of the babies that we have? So in other words, this comes down to quality versus quantity.
Right. I'm 100% prepared to put that burden on the state.
The foster care system, I'm told, is full of black kids. The prison system is full of former foster black kids. So is it that we need more, or do we need to take care of the ones that we have for better quality and let foundation for then expanding the quantity?
We're going to have so many. I want so many that they have to figure out what they're going to do with us, like they happen to figure out what they're going to do with all them Hispanic babies that's popping up every quarter of a second. I want this nation to have to deal with us the way they're dealing with them. Do you think it ain't no whole bunch of little Mexican babies in the system? I mean, Latin babies in the system? It's jam-packed with them, too. And what is happening is the state is taking on the burden and the financial burden of having to locate these children in homes that do, well, the best they going to do. Some of it ain't right, but some of these other legitimate homes ain't right. So what they going to do is they going to pay. The state of America is going to pay the average American to care for the children that these other adults decide they can't care for. And as far as I'm concerned, we need to put that and lay that and express that burden on this nation. So for one, that they can see, you're not going to, for one, keep us for at 11, 12, 13, 15% in this country for long. We're going to breed out. We are going to breed out. And we can't do nothing about the Native Americans. They moved the borderline on them. One reason why we have so many is because they moved Mexico from where you know, up here where you are, Brother Rodney, all the way down there past to Yucatan. So we gonna take on that girth of Latin blood and Latin birth. But as far as I'm concerned, black people need to find somewhere and get to birthing some babies. And yes, take care of them best you can, Mr. Rodney. And if this country puts such a squeeze on us that we can't take care of them, then boom, here you go, state, you take care of them. Quit creating conditions in this nation where we can't take care of them. And then give me my damn reparations, so it ain't no question of taking care of them. They already taken care of by the mandate of the state. They got their education. They got their free health care. They have their free housing. They have their free legal representation. And so having them is not going to be a problem, because the reparations package is going to make it so our births into infinity are not a burden to our overall socioeconomic class. So let's get it popping.
So this kind of takes that conversation that Lee and I had almost to include it all. Because, and you mentioned the crack babies, and I don't know what the data is on the crack babies, and I do hear anecdotal things from folks like you and other people in the education profession, and a few people in the medical profession. But the idea of the state being responsible for our children and raising our children is not being children to give to someone else, whether it's a foster parent, or the state, and foster parents fall under the state, because the success of our children in those systems has not been beneficial to us, and it hasn't been beneficial to them. It might be beneficial to the state in creating more free labor in the prison system, creating more addicts, creating more unemployment, and just putting people on the system in general. But I have to admit, I'm not one to go out and espouse children that we cannot take care of. And as much as I support the concept of reparations, I don't know when that's going to materialize. And so if I'm expecting that package to take care of this excess progeny out there, first of all, money is not the problem. Money is not the issue. And Black people will not, and I look forward to all of the people who call in who disagree with me on this, but economics will not get Black people to where we need to be. If it was about economics, then all of those Black Wall Streets would still be, and we would have the power derived from it, as everyone tells me we will get from this economic prowess. It is the foundation of Black people, and the strength of Black people always has been, until it was ripped apart, the cohesiveness and the unity, the love and understanding and teaching of the family, the mother, the father, the sister, the brother, the grandparents at its core, and then beyond that, aunts and uncles, cousins. That's our strength and power. But when you break that up, because when you have children in the foster system, you have one brother or one sibling here, one sibling there. Maybe they'll meet each other again, maybe not. So I'm very cautious on when I say that we should just keep spitting out children, because if that's the case, if it's a matter of spitting out children, there's a lot of, you said it yourself, there's a lot of brothers with children that you don't know about until after they transition. And what is the plight of those children? What is the plight of a child that doesn't have his family there? And then for the folks who say, well, yeah, but just because two people aren't married, and just because we have these multiple mixed families, that doesn't necessarily mean that the children are not going to come out well, because you have, you know, two parent families where children don't come out well. I say, one of the things Sam told me that was very important and that I repeated was, he says, we operate on the rule, not the exception. And the rules are still out there, and that's our guide rail. And so let's go for the things where we can get the greatest success, the greatest angst and anguish. And so just spitting out babies, if that is the key, the brother with 34 children, that the women say there's no point in trying to get child support from him because there's nothing left to get because he's not Nick Cannon, or 84 children. So I was with you on everything except for that part. I do believe ultimately we need to have more children. But right now I'm for let's take care of the children that we have.
Apparently at 15%, at our max, that's after they done came, they done died all out at the war, in the wars. And what, I'm here. Necessity is the mother of invention, would you say? And at this point, our numbers have brokered no necessity. We just have had the common sense, like you said, not to burden ourselves by doing, because my mother's 7 of 17. So clearly there's a trend downwards in births, okay? In general, people are not birthing like they did in the, you know, they're not farm hands and they don't need that agricultural help. So they're not having all them babies like that. However, until we do something, because what did those babies do? They did. They helped that at the farm. Those babies, some of them went off to college. Some of them went out to war and sent their pension home. What I'm telling you is that until we start birthing correctly, like you say, correctly, if you must, until we start seriously birthing, making sure that families are having at least 4 or 5 children per generation, making sure of it, not shaming and taking pills and making people go to chastity classes, ensuring that there are 4 or 5 births a month per generation in their family, then what we're asking for is slow. I hate to sound white with it, but slow annihilation, definitely on the economic front. I don't think we'll be able to network fast enough. We won't be able to buy enough black merchandise to get ourselves out of a birthing situation. And we've already done all the integrating. I could possibly see we have diluted and spread the black genome as far and wide as we can. And so now we have to actually look at each other and decide if we're going to have sex with each other again. And I think it's going to happen. Not watching all that pornly in some kind of weird fetishized way, but actually, like you said, Mr. Rodney, traveling and getting to know and diversifying the genome by breeding outside of your immediate socioeconomic struggle. Now, does that mean sometimes you're going to have to dip low? Yeah, I think you should always be dipping low. Don't be out here trying to breed ahead of yourself. Go on and find you somebody of a lower socio. Go find you a lower socioeconomic person, because if we all keep doing that, if we all make sure that we are uplifting a family as best as we can when we marry into it, because you know how I feel mm-hmm. about you don't marry a person, you marry a whole family system. Mm-hmm. And if their family is strung out, somebody's going to cook up a fucked up scheme and they are going to be smoking your paycheck. You know what I'm saying? So you marry into a family system. So you have to see if you marrying up or down. If you know you marrying up, quit being predatory. Go on and find you, somebody who, you know, when they get with you, it's going to be a marked difference. You know you're going to be able to employ one of their little special needs brothers. Or, you're going to do something for that family. And so, yeah, that is a topic for another day. And and I look forward to it, brothers. I have good news and bad news. I would like to give our Black History moment real quick, because I'm being beckoned outside of the home for my hair braiding business. I have to braid hair still because teaching ain't enough, y'all. Hey, teaching ain't enough.
Money, girl.
I still have to do hair. I still have to, and they're going to want me there at noon. And if I'm still here mm-hmm. talking at noon, it will not work. All right, so today I'd like to discuss, if it's okay, can we pivot to today's...
Absolutely. Keep going.
All right.
Keep going.
Now, today I'd like to discuss a very odd a person who's just normal like me and you, but things in her life twisted and turned to where she became a poor person, who became a rich person, who became a white person, who became back a black person, and then became a poor person again. And all this in a very, very, very short lifespan, in my opinion, fairly short lifespan. She lived to be 65, and the lady I want to talk to you about is Sarah Rector Campbell. Sarah Rector Campbell Crawford, actually, because she ends up marrying twice. Now, Sarah Rector is a little gorgeous little black girl, and born March 3rd, so this would be, around her birthday month. Was born in the Oklahoma Territory, Lee, where you just came from, out in Taft, Oklahoma, in Indian Territory. And she was
richest colored girl in the world.
Was at one time
she had all money.
The richest black person in America. Mm-hmm. Okay. So she had 5 siblings. And but somehow those siblings were not privy to the riches as she were. So she was a Creek Indian, and she was a part of the group who had got relocated in the Trail of Tears with that whole Indian treaty and stuff. So they were relocated from the Florida area, from the Everglades area. So they were technically considered like Seminole, but they had given, by the time Sarah came along, they had kind of given that part up, all right? So part of her money came from the land that her people ended up getting, okay, later on, right? So the parcel of land that was allotted to her was 60 miles, and it was like nothing. She didn't even think there was nothing to it. And so it was $30 to keep it for the annual taxes. And so her family kept the expenses and kept that piece of land until one day they did a survey of the land. And Standard Oil Company drilled and found out that up under that land was that black crude, that oil. So in that, she became that black gold. So she became what they call a oil magnate, meaning because of the amount of that she was pretty much sole owner of that land. And so she ended up raking in all the dividends for that land. And this was a really weird time because even though, of course, civil rights was over and the Reconstruction era was also over, so a lot of those Jim Crow laws, a lot of those spoken but not written, you can, and some of them even written, whites-only laws were had to be relaxed just so this woman could spend her money in towns that pretty much no other black person could shop in. But because of her wealth, they had to stop. Believe it or not, Sarah Rector was able to cure racism with the amount of money that she had and that she was able to broker, you know, that kind of business behavior with these people and get them to open up. So eventually she leaves Oklahoma and she moves here to Kansas City, Missouri, and she builds a beautiful mansion right here off of the 18th and Vine district. And this would have been when 18th and Vine was what it's known for, you know, because 18th and Vine and 12th and Vine, that whole area is actually internationally known as the hotbed or the birth of where definitely where swing and jazz comes from. Some even say also the blues, but I'll give that to the South. But what ends up happening is she gets power of attorney to some, you know, less than good intended white people, and they end up whittling down her fortune, you know, whittling it down to nothing with bogus, you know, business ventures and just, you know, outrageous tariffs and stuff, cost of living, because back in that day, a well-oiled machine called the Pendergrass family would have been in charge of Kansas City proper. So, you know, nefarious dealings and whatnot with her got her down to so where she was eventually put into a nursing home and died here in Kansas City, being cared for. Now the home still stands. Her home still stands. It's under the care of a philanthropic organization, but it's not in use. One of the things that I really appreciated about her story is that she did still get her education. She even though she knew she was rich, she was still enrolled in like boarding schools. And so at least to a certain degree, she took her education and how she was going to keep her money, you know, the know-how of what it was going to take to keep her money very seriously. She was not lucky in marriage. You know, neither of her marriages lasted very long. However, she was smart enough to create heirs.
Like me, Russell.
Create heirs who were able to, you know, take advantage of the fact that they had that Native American blood and that the sacrifices that their people had made kind of had rebounded and manifested itself in just the luck of having oil where they had gave her land, where they had traded her, where they had unfairly traded her land. Let me say that correctly, because the words are where the power is. So I want to please, if you out there, do your research on Sarah Rector. It's almost like she hit the lottery, but it's the saddest lottery you have ever seen in your life. And, you know, just get to know how this country operates when they perceive you having wealth and what it means, how you can go from somebody who would be spit on to someone who they would spit shine your, you know, from spitting on top of your head to then spit shine in your shoes, you know, because that's what wealth does. It takes you out of that, you know, that poverty state and into favor with those who usually would like to see you dead. Thank you all. I just want to thank you all so much for today. And just know that I'm out here keeping up the fight. I'm still working. And it was a fantastic break. I was able to get quite a bit of rest, but work must still be done, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Well, we thank you.
All right.
All right, pieces. Rodney, again, man, I was going to end up a little early today. What you got going on this morning?
Well, today is shooting day. So if somebody wants to go out to the range, I will be out to the range. And then this evening, Brother Devin Moore is celebrating his birthday. His birthday was yesterday, but he's celebrating it tonight. He asked folks to wear purple. Purple is not something that I have a lot of in my closet. So if I can get something purple to wear, I plan on going to that brother's birthday celebration tonight. I think he had one last night that I found out sort of at the last minute. But I got invited to one tonight. And since I'm invited, I'm going to try to meet that invitation and celebrate at least a little while his another year trip around the sun. So
what's going on this morning, maybe going
to the range. That might be it.
Nah, Rodney, we going to breakfast. Get yourself together. Let's go. Let's do the wing spot. We going to breakfast. Get yourself together. Let's go. Let's go to that waffle spot right across from Aliente.
How are we going to go to that? And I'm here.
I'll be there in 40 minutes. I'll be there in 40 minutes.
See, now this is the thing with Lee. You never know sometimes whether the brother is just joshing you or not. That's an old term for joking. Because there's a part of me to say that sounds like something Lee would do. But then there's another part of me that says the brother was just in okay and he was ready to talk
and
about
I'm in
how
Vegas
that
this morning.
To get home.
And I'm in Vegas this morning. Let's go. Let's get it done. I'm hungry.
Well, sucks, but let me call a general because you know I don't move like that without her. But, hey, if you're serious, we can do that.
Absolutely. Let's go.
Well, there you have it.
I told you I needed you up
this
morning. I told you I needed you up this morning. I gave you the hit. I said I needed you up and on time.
Well, you definitely got me up because I think I set like 7 different alarms to make sure. Like I don't know what Lee has going on, but for sure he want me awake. And I only had 2 hours of sleep the other night, and I was planning on catching up on it. But of course, I had to be on the show this morning because just so you all know, there's a 3-hour difference time between Lee's time and my time.
And I am feeling it.
So, his 11 o'clock is my 8 o'clock, and I usually get to bed until about 4 o'clock.
Man, that traffic last night coming from LA to here, oh my God! Usually I make that trip in 3 hours, 45 minutes, 4 hours. Bro, it was almost 5.5 hours to get here last night.
Brother, you know you're not supposed to make that trip on a Friday night. You know that,
bro. It was construction. It was just horrible. We'll talk about it in a minute, though. Get yourself together. See you soon. Family,
all right,
you
well, everybody.
Live,
that means
listen
I'm
later. Thank you all for joining in. This is what we do. Love you all, and damn thing you can do about it. Till next week.